everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Men in Tights podcast. We got a lot of wrestling talk on this episode, and let me get right to one of the big stories. We had AEW's first stadium pay-per-view event internationally at that. It was All In London, England this past Sunday, and my overall thoughts before I go into the matches themselves individually. Overall thoughts, I thought it was a, from top to bottom, a solid pay-per-view. And one of the better ones that I've seen of AEW. Granted, I haven't seen that many of their pay-per-views, to be quite honest. But for this being their first stadium show and the first international show, I feel like they delivered very well on a lot of their matches. And if this is going to be their, what I would assume to be their WrestleMania going forward, then, you know, pun intended, they should go all in with it. And now we get right to the matches themselves. We had on the 0 hour, it was MJF and Adam Cole, Better Than You, Baby, teaming up against Aussie Open, which is Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. It was a pretty, you know, it was the kind of match you would have expected maybe on like a Dynamite or a Rampage or Collision, but it was an entertaining match. We got to see the double clothesline and the kangaroo kick from MJF, and of course, Better Than You, Baby came out on top with the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions chips. And let me take my water right here because I'm getting parched as I'm speaking. That's better. Yeah, it went about 8 minutes, so it was a pretty good match. Again, not the most exciting, but it was entertaining. It served the job and told the story that it was meant to tell. And then we followed this up with the FTW Rules match for the FTW Championship, which was Hook making his big return to avenge his loss against Jack Perry. And I will get into the, you know, the backstage BS drama with Jack Perry and CM Punk, just the whole, you know, see, this is real glass, climb your river and all that. And regardless of who was the instigator of the incident, whether it was Punk or Jack Perry, the fact that so many of these incidents seem to be involving CM Punk really, really should say a lot to Tony Khan, and he should really consider taking some serious action on that, if it, these reports are to be believed as true, definitive fact. But the match, Hook versus Jack Perry, was a very good match, in my opinion. And I mean, I've been a fan of Jack Perry for a while, and although he's, I don't know if it's just me believing his new heel persona or just him kind of just getting big for his britches, as they say. I don't know, I'm just not as into him as I used to be. But Hook, he's grown on me a lot, and I've become a pretty good fan of his now. And yeah, the spot with the glass was very unnecessary. I understand, you know, it's, you know, FTW rules, you know, like essentially like ECW rules, extreme rules, whatever you want to call it, hardcore kind of match. But just, I've never been a fan of using real glass in these kind of stunts because of how much, how the danger factor that is in that. Because, you know, one bad move and one little nice piece of sharp glass can just cut an artery and then you bleed out to death. I mean, we all remember the Nick Gage and David Arquette match with the light tube that almost severed his David Arquette's aorta, and he got bled to death. So, yeah. I mean, if you want to use glass on a wrestling program, use Hollywood Sugar Glass like WWE does. Gives you the same effect, and it's less dangerous. But, yeah, Hook came out on top, being a two-time FTW champion, and we'll see how that story with him goes forward, if they are to continue the story between him and Jack Perry, although if the reports of Jack Perry and CM Punk being suspended are to be believed, then I guess they're gonna not continue with that story. But then we move on to the main card of the show, which kicked it off with CM Punk defending his Real Worlds Championship against Ring of Honor Television Champion Samoa Joe. This one was a good match, a solid match in my opinion. Of course, not exactly at the level of their Ring of Honor matches from almost 20 years ago, but it was a match that delivered nonetheless. I was thoroughly entertained, at least. You know, Samoa Joe playing to the crowd as much as he did. Punk kind of leaning more into the heel tendencies as he is one to do when the crowd kind of dictates that pace for the match. And of course, Punk came out on top, and yeah, all that backstage drama with Punk getting into it with Jack Perry, allegedly getting into it with Miro, and yeah, I don't know. Just seems to be a constant thing with CM Punk, really. And but if again, if the reports are to be believed, then he is getting fed up with AEW and he's wanting to leave. We'll see how all that works out, because I mean, supposedly, you know, the little incident of him being backstage at a WWE show a few months ago, where he apparently made amends with some of the people there. Who knows if that's going to open the door to him eventually coming back to WWE. Well, we shall wait and see how that goes. Then we move on to the six-man tag match, Bullet Club Gold, which consisted of Juice Robinson, Jay White, and I can never know how to pronounce it, just Takeshita, taking on the Golden Elite, which was Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, and Hangman Adam Page. Another very solid, entertaining match, which is kind of funny, because I didn't consider it until, you know, speaking with my brother about it from the post-show press conference, how it was a lot of multi-people matches on here. It was like an oversaturation of multi-people matches on this show, which if he's going by the mentality of like what Bruce Pritchard would say with Vince McMahon on with certain WrestleManias, how just, and it's a reason to get people on the card, an excuse to get someone on the card, I understand that, but so many multi-person matches, it loses the importance of the matches themselves when you have too much of them, in my opinion at least. But, you know, that's just me. But still, it was an entertaining match. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I am a fan of everyone in this match, especially a fan of Adam Page and Kenny Omega and Jay White. He's, you know, I've grown to enjoy him as well. And we saw the Bullet Club Gold come out on top, defeating the Golden Elite in this match. And it does look like they're kind of going to, based on the episode of Dynamite that aired earlier in the evening, I'm recording this Wednesday night, August the 20th, no, it's the 30th, yeah, 30th that I'm recording this, but, yeah, it looks like they're going to kind of continue the storyline between the Elite and Bullet Club Gold, so that's another one that we shall wait and see how that progresses. And speaking of the Elite, we move on to the AEW World Tag Team Championship, the Young Bucks taking on FTR, the rubber match of the trilogy to determine the greatest tag team in professional wrestling today. And another one that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed very, very much. Although, in my opinion at least, FTR, to me, has not been as solid and polished with their in-ring work since being let go from WWE all those years ago. And I don't know, that's just my opinion. I mean, other people will say differently if you ask them. But it's not to take away from their in-ring ability, because they are still one of the best tag teams in professional wrestling. Just to me, I feel like, not to say that they lost their fire and desire, I feel like they've just something about them that's been lacking since they got AEW. That's just my opinion. But I'm still a fan of them and the Young Bucks. I'm back and forth with them, because they can put on good matches, you know, but they kind of suck at this in-ring storytelling part of it. And after reading their biography that they released a couple of years ago, I've grown to respect their hustle very much so, and really learning more about what they went through to get to where they are in their careers, and how they did it. They've succeeded without the big machine of the WWE, and they hustled on the indies, hustled with Ring of Honor, hustled with New Japan, hustled their way with AEW to get to the point of where they are right now, where they have this international deal, television deal with AEW, being on pay-per-view and all this other stuff, but again, without the mega machine of the WWE. That is something to be respected and appreciated very much so, because they've created a new wrestling home for other professional wrestlers that are not part of the WWE, whether they are not able to get hired by WWE or they are let go from WWE, they've created that alternate home for them to, you know, apply their craft. So, and that is something to be admired and respected. But I did enjoy how the match ended, where kind of like a version of the Meltzer driver, but that they it was like a super shatter machine that FTR did, and that secured the victory for them to retain the tag team championships. I enjoyed that very, very much. And then we saw on Dynamite, that was a clip after this match that showed Bullet Club Gold kind of getting into it with the Young Bucks and FTR backstage. That sets up them having a tag match, an 8-man tag match at All Out happening this weekend. Which, I mean, it's Tony Khan's thing. He wants to do All In and then All Out back to back like that. You know, he has the money to do it if he wants to. You know, good for him. That's his deal. But it also kind of creates the problem with the fans, where you got to decide, am I going to spend the money on All In? Am I going to spend money on All Out? You know, because not every fan, even some of the diehard fans, because the diehard fans, they'll order anything and everything from AEW, but some of them, they're going to come to the point where, much like how it is with movies now, where people have to decide, like, all right, I want to see this movie, but am I willing to spend the money to go to the theaters to see it, or am I just going to wait for it to come on streaming? You know, it's become like that for professional wrestling now, at least in respect to AEW. No. But yes, FTR retaining their championship, and we move on to the Stadium Stampede, which was Eddie Kingston, Penta El Cerro Miedo, and the Best Friends, which consisted of Chuck Taylor, Trent Beretta, and Orange Cassidy, taking on the Blackpool Combat Club, which is of course the team of Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, as well as the returning Santana and Ortiz. And this one was entertaining, but it was just a kind of a clusterfuck of a match, which is to be expected for this kind of match. And some stupid spots in the match that I just did not get, like the whole thing with Penta being taken out early on and then just to show up as, you know, his Penta Oscuro, and them just botching that ladder spot at the end of the match. It's like, I don't know. I get it, the fans at Wembley were into it, you know, and that's really what matters. If the fans in attendance are reacting, then that's what matters to them. You know, because we can say whatever we want here on YouTube, on a podcast, or on social media, but it's the fans in that have paid their tickets, the price for the tickets to go to the show. If they're reacting, that's what they want. So who am I to say, you know, if what they were doing did or didn't work? But still, it was an entertaining match, and a lot of bloodshed in this match, which again was to be expected. I mean, I'm not a fan of the excessive blood. I'm a fan of blood when the story calls for it and it's necessary. But when it's just done, when it's blood for the sake of blood, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I did enjoy the little spot where Sue made her little appearance. That was fun. We, of course, the team of Kingston, Penta, Best Friends, and Orange Cassidy came out on top in this one, which set up with the match that happened on Dynamite, where it was Orange Cassidy versus Penta for the national championship to take on Jon Moxley at All Out, which Orange Cassidy came out on top for that and cut a very, very good promo that since he doesn't really do a lot of in-ring promos, and I could easily say it was Orange Cassidy's best promo that he's cut in AEW. And that's a match that actually, if I was going to watch All Out, I'll be working during the pay-per-view, so I'm not going to get to watch it anyway. That is one of the matches that I actually would have wanted to see. Then we come to the Fatal 4-Way Women's Championship match. Saraya taking on Toni Storm, Dr. Britt Baker DMD, and the champion defending Hikaru Shida. And the whole concept of this match, like, I understand why they had the match with the people that are in it, but Toni Storm catching in her rematch clause in a Fatal 4-Way match is just, from a storytelling perspective, stupid, in my opinion. Because if you're going to cash in your rematch, you're going to want a one-on-one match to make the odds in your favor, not in a multi-person match where you're at a 25% chance of winning. Again, like, that the logic, the storytelling logic behind that is just stupid, in my opinion. But it is what it is. The whole purpose of it was to tell the story of the outcasts and their pending dissension of the group, and the pending, what's the right word that I'm looking for? Them. It's another way of just saying them splitting up. Disillusion, I guess, would be the term for it between them, because we saw the tension, dissension, and conflict between Tony and Saraya during the match, where the climax of that was when Paige's mom, you know, Saraya, her mom Saraya, was out at ringside because Saraya came out with her whole family, and she was holding, I think, either Britt Baker or Hikaru Shida, you know, to do the spot where you have them by the arms and then you do a chop or whatever, and they ducked, and then Tony hit Saraya's mom, and that's where everything just kind of went to shit for between the two of them. And Ruby Soho came out trying to ease the tensions, but it was not to be. It was to no avail, rather. And Saraya would hit, I'm not even sure what the name of the move would be. I mean, I don't know if it was the page turner when she was in WWE, but you know, she hit her with her finisher after spraying her with in the eyes with the whatever the spray paint can was, and came out for the 1-2-3 and being the new AEW Women's World Champion, the first woman in professional wrestling to have been NXT Champion, WWE Divas Champion, and AEW Women's World Champion. And you know, it was expected and kind of predictable that she was going to win. I mean, of course, the first London show for AEW, her first match in London since like 9 years, so since 2014. So again, predictable outcome. It was to be expected, but it doesn't take away from the moment itself. It was a great moment for her, because I have been a Paige fan, Saraya fan, for the longest time, and it was cool to see her have that moment, because yeah, it sucked when she was forced to retire back in 2018 due to a broken neck, but she's made her comeback and she's going pretty strong right now, so that's pretty cool. And we move on to the coffin match, which was Swerve Strickland teaming with Christian Cage to take on Darby Allin and Sting. And this one was the one that I really, really enjoyed. I enjoyed this match a lot. I don't know where I would rank it as far as my favorite matches on the card, but I was really very much into this match, and I really especially liked that Sting came out to Seek and Destroy by Metallica, which was his old theme song towards the end of WCW, I'm a Metallica fan already, so getting to hear that was really cool. And then the entrance itself was done very well, and the little cinematic thing that they did before they actually came out was really cool too, because I am a fan of cinematic stuff like that in wrestling when it's done right, which I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the video with the, you know, if you're watching this on YouTube when I'm discussing the people on the screen behind me. But yeah, this was a fun match. This is another match where I'm a fan of everybody involved. I am a Darby Allin fan. I'm a big fan of Sting, fan of Christian Cage for the longest time, fan of Swerve. I believe this is the kind of the lead-in to Darby Allin taking on Luchasaurus for the TNT Championship at All Out. So this is just, you know, kind of another pit stop on the way for that. But this one was another very, very good match, and I enjoyed it very much. And the spot with Nathan Wayne coming out with the skateboard. Any spot with, like, stuff like that with the skateboard always just kind of makes, like, I have, you know, lower back issues, so stuff with like that kind of just makes me cringe a little bit. Not because I think it's, you know, like, cringy, whatever. No, it's just like, because it looks like it would hurt a lot. Especially like when Art Darby did the coffin drop on top of the casket. That made my spine hurt a little bit when I was watching. But ultimately, Sting and Darby Allin came out on top. Of course they would. I mean, it's Sting. Sting is, you know, he has to win on the first stadium show for AEW. But still, it's a fun match. I enjoyed this match very, very much. As I did with the next match that came on, was Will Ospreay against Chris Jericho, with Chris Jericho having his special entrance with Fozzy performing Judas live, which I've been trying for years to go see Fozzy live. Every time I've had the chance to do so, I would have my tickets purchased, but then something would come up and I'm just not able to do it. So we'll see if I ever will get to see them live. But yeah, three times when I was living in North Carolina that I had my tickets to go see them, and something just got in the way. But that is neither here nor there, and none of you really care to hear about that, I'm sure. But yeah, Will Ospreay against Chris Jericho. The battle of the current best in the world, Will Ospreay, against the GOAT, the Ocho, Chris Jericho. And whatever my feelings on Chris Jericho's political beliefs and other stuff like that was whatever, kind of has nothing to do with this, because whatever I feel about that doesn't take away from the fact that he is one of the best professional wrestlers that I have ever seen in my life, and he can deliver and adapt to any match in any situation. Because I was curious, because Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega have kind of similar styles, and I really enjoyed Jericho's matches with Omega at the first Double or Nothing and at the Wrestle Kingdom in 2018, and so I was curious to see how he was going to do in a match with Will Ospreay, and they definitely delivered on this one, and I'm hopeful that this can lead to more big opportunities like this for Will Ospreay. I mean, he's supposed to be at that Bound for Glory happening in Chicago coming in October, so that's going to be a pretty exciting thing too for Impact Wrestling. And because I remember on the contract signing promo on Dynamite before All In, that he mentioned that his contract with New Japan would be coming up and he would be a free agent. So I'm just wondering, is he going to be officially a free agent going forward, and he's just going to make appearances in multiple places, or is he going to be All Elite? We shall see how that goes. I was talking with my brother about it. I was saying that it would be fun if he stays a free agent and he actually makes an appearance at the Royal Rumble, and they can set up, kind of have the payoff to the Twitter feud that him and Seth Rollins had some years ago, and they can have a match for the world title at WrestleMania, or just have a match at WrestleMania, period. I think would be a really cool dream scenario, booking scenario, for that a lot of fans would be very much into. But this match, Jericho and Ospreay, Jericho, he got the big pop during his entrance, as expected, but then as the match progressed, the fans were more solidly behind Ospreay, which, again, to be expected, it's his home country. Why wouldn't they be all in for him? But Ospreay came out on top in this match, and I'm glad that he did, because he needed the win more than Jericho did. And moving on to the next match, it was the House Rules match for the AEW World Trios Championship, the House of Black, which is, of course, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews, taking on the acclaimed and badass Billy Gunn, the one night only appearance of badass Billy Gunn, as far as I know, for AEW, which, it's just gimmick, badass Billy Gunn, but you know what I mean. And this one was a fun match. Went only about 10, 11 minutes, not that long, but it told the story that it needed to tell, which was whether or not Billy Gunn still had it, quote-unquote, to go up against the House of Black, and he definitely showed that he still has it, or, the fans, you still got it, kind of thing, which is funny, because I remember in the promo that they showed, where it was him on that episode of Collision, I think it was on a Collision or Rampage, where he took off his boots and left them in the ring, that the fans are chanting, you still got it, while he's taking his boots off to signal that he was going to retire, which I just thought was kind of funny as a visual gag. But yeah, a fun match that for sure, and Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed came out on top, becoming the new AEW World Trios champions. And on Dynamite that night, they unveiled special Acclaimed scissor editions of the Trios Championships, with a pink strap and the straps themselves actually being like a little scissor thing, which is, it's silly and goofy, but I like it. It's fun, it fits the gimmick, and if they come out with commemorative versions of that in the AEW shop, that is one that I actually would like to have. But yeah, acclaimed and Billy Gunn on coming out on top, bringing us to the main event, the AEW World Championship, MJF defending against Adam Cole. This one, I'm not sure if I would say it was my favorite match. I'm more inclined to say that Ospreay and Jericho was my favorite match on the show, but this one would be a very, very close second, or if not close second, at least tied as my favorite match, because this one was a very, very entertaining match. Because again, it's another one where I'm a fan of both participants. I've been a fan of MJF for a few years now, since I became more aware of him through AEW, and Adam Cole, I've been a fan of his for years, since, you know, first being exposed to him in Ring of Honor. And so I knew that this, at the very least, was going to be a very good match, and it turned out to be a very, very good match. Not quite great, in my opinion, but it was still a very, very good match, and I enjoyed it very, very much. A lot of moments that, you know, they teased one, you know, either one of them turning heel on the other, which I will say I'm glad that they didn't go with the predictable heel turn at the end of this. Although the way the show ended, I thought was just ridiculous, with Roderick Strong being involved, and I do agree with a lot of fans that felt that the show was solid up until that point, because it was very, very stupidly done, and I don't know why they did it the way they did, but it was a very good match. I enjoyed it very, very much. I mean, Adam Cole is one of the best wrestlers in the world today. Definitely one of my favorites in AEW. I would say one of my top five favorite in all Elite Wrestling right now. And MJF being one of the best in the business right now. Not the best technically in the ring, but he is one of the best characters and entertainers and performers in professional wrestling today. And he is finally showing that he can go into the ring with the best wrestlers in the world, because he doesn't have that many matches, really, and whether that's a thing in his contract, where he only can wrestle X amount of matches a year, I'm not sure, but I'm glad that, especially since he's become world champion almost a year ago, that he's finally having matches that, you know, you can take him seriously as world champion, because up until now, to me, he has not had the best world championship reign. And really, now that I think about it, a lot of the world champions in AEW have not had that many great reigns. I mean, Jericho as the first champion was a pretty decent reign. Moxley, during his first reign, was a solid champion. Kenny Omega was a solid champion. But then after that, it's just been, I don't know. But yeah, MJF retained the match in the end after almost 30 minutes. And then it's moving on to All Out, where they're going to have... They're going to be defending the Ring of Honor tag team titles against the winning team from a battle royal that's happening on Rampage this Friday. So by the time you guys listen or watch this, probably will already know who they're going to fight. And but yeah, overall, I would say, yeah, this is, if I would assume that Tony Khan is going to want to make All In their WrestleMania, then they should treat it as such and present it as such. And you know, we got a little bit of that with, you know some, like, the live performances for the entrance music and the appearances of, you know, people for like Mercedes Moné in the crowd, teasing potential stuff that could go on with that, you know. So and I've been critical of the AEW product several times in the past, and I still stand by everything that I've said on here about them, because I feel my criticisms are reasonable and justified. But I am a professional wrestling fan before I am a fan of anything else, really. I'm not a fan of WWE more than AEW, although you can kind of see that, but I'm a professional wrestling fan first, then a WWE fan, then an AEW fan. And I want AEW to succeed as much as possible, because when they succeed and they put on a great product, fans win, professional wrestling wins, and that's all I can ask for as a fan of professional wrestling. And moving on from AEW, we go to the other wrestling show that's happening this weekend. It is WWE's Payback, which as of right now, we have 6 matches officially scheduled for the show. And one of the matches that we have is a Steel City Street Fight for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships. Champions Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn defending against the team of Finn Balor and Damian Priest of the Judgment Day. And this has been a story that's been going on for pretty much the entire summer, now that I think about it. And I have been very much into it. And I'm liking how, since Edge was, you know, kicked out of Judgment Day and Finn has stepped up as essentially the leader of the group, how they've been building up a lot of credibility, and they are a group to be taken seriously, and I like that very much. Because initially, nobody really cared, nobody really took them seriously, but they've shown that they can be a solid faction in WWE, and I'm glad that they have been getting these opportunities with you know, Dominic being the North American champion and Rhea Ripley being the women's world champion, and which I'll get to her match in a little bit. But I'm glad that they are being taken seriously. And I'm also glad that we're finally getting more title defenses of the tag team championships, because since, what was the last time that they defended? Like, what, 2-3 months ago? I honestly can't remember when was the last time that Owens and Sami had defended their tag titles, but I'm glad that they're finally defending them again. What I really would like is for somehow for the belts to either be split or for them to kind of just create another set of tag team championships on SmackDown. If they're not going to have him the belts being defended across both brands, then I feel like they would have to come up with that solution, like how they came up with the World Heavyweight Championship for Monday Night Raw, since Roman Reigns is on SmackDown as the Undisputed Universal Champion. But This is a street fight. Of course, there's going to be some, you know, fun spots, some exciting spots, some shenanigans going on, I'm sure. And as far as what I think that this match can go, I don't know. I mean, because this is a match that it can go either way, and I would not be mad with either team winning. But depending on where I think the story is going to go with Judgment Day, since they keep teasing the conflict between Priest and Balor with JD McDonagh kind of being in the middle of that, I don't know, this could go in so many ways. It can go to the route of Finn and Priest winning the championships with some involvement of JD McDonagh, where Finn will be defending his friend, defending him as his buddy, and then Priest will question, you know, his involvement, because it's like, now it's, you know, he feels like that it wasn't an authentic victory because of that. But sorry, I have my friend and her husband there doing a live stream right now. The Pokedad TCG. I'll link there the page in the description for anyone that wants to check them out. But I think this is going to be a very, very good match. And I hope that it gets plenty of time, because if it's going to be only just these 6 matches plus the Grayson Waller effect with Cody Rhodes as a guest, then I'm hoping that they're going to give each match plenty of time, at least 10 to 15 minutes minimum for each of these matches, so that they have plenty of time to tell a good story and to entertain the crowd, because really that's what matters most. The crowd needs to be entertained with the stories that they're telling us. But as I keep thinking about it, again, it can go either way, and I'd be satisfied with either team winning. But again, depending on where they want to take the story with Judgment Day, I'm thinking KO and Sami are going to retain their championships here. And then we move on to another match that kind of started since SummerSlam, from the SummerSlam Battle Royal that was won by the man who that everybody knows what his whose game it is, L.A. Knight. Yeah, he'll be taking on The Miz, which their story started from SummerSlam with L.A. Knight eliminating The Miz in that Battle Royal, and then Miz being feeling like he's being disrespected by the, you know, flavor of the month, the new, you know, the new it guy or whatever he was calling him. I don't know, I mean, I won't say it's been the best and most solid build-up, but I've been entertained with the promos and segments that they've had, especially even Miz coming out as LA Knight on Raw this week was very fun. And I don't know, just Miz seems to have, he has a history of coming out and imitating other wrestlers when he's in a hot feud with them. You know, coming out as The Rock heading into WrestleMania 27, you know, 13 years ago now, almost 13 years ago. imitating John Cena going into their match at WrestleMania 33. There was a couple other ones I can't remember, but yeah, I was looking at him it's just funny that he tends to do that a lot. But yeah, I am liking the feud because it's building LA Knight up more and more, because he's, you know, going up against someone who is a two-time WWE champion, someone who has main evented WrestleMania, and you know, it also to me it shows that they trust The Miz to be able to help get LA Knight over to that next level, like how they trusted him to get Logan Paul over, and we've seen how Logan Paul has done since he's come to WWE and all the amazing matches that he's had, which is just, you know, say what you want about Logan Paul as a human being, as a wrestler, he is pretty damn good. You can't deny how good he is in the ring. But I digress. But LA Knight and The Miz, it's going to be a fun match for sure. And I'm going to pick LA Knight because, you know, unless they're going to continue this going into the next show, which I believe is in October. I don't remember what the show is going to be. I think it's Fastlane. If I'm wrong, I could be wrong. I think Fastlane is the next one on the schedule. And let me look up, because the next one on that's happening on the Peacock is No Mercy for NXT. Yes, Fastlane is the next one coming for the main roster shows after this. So like, unless they want to continue it to the next one, to there, having where they have like a blow off gimmick match, I'm predicting LA Knight to come out victorious on this night. And then moving on, we have the United States Championship, which will be Austin Theory against Rey Mysterio. And this is interesting because I'm looking at the listing on Wikipedia and it's showing Austin Theory as the defending champion, but I'm pretty sure Rey Mysterio is the one that's the champion going into this, so whoever edited that, yeah, you're wrong on that one. That's just kind of funny. But yeah, Rey Mysterio defending against the former champion Austin Theory. And to me, this also kind of says a lot about how they trust Rey Mysterio to get Austin Theory over even more so, because, you know, Austin Theory, it's clear that people in management have a lot of faith in him, and they believe in him a lot, because they've had him in the ring with former world champions like Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins and John Cena, and now they're having him in the ring with a Hall of Famer, Rey Mysterio. And so, are they gonna give the title back to him in this one? I don't know. We shall see. Or are they gonna use this to continue the feud or continue the story between Rey Mysterio and LWO, specifically Santos Escobar, and how they're gonna go for that? Where, you know, is he gonna turn on Rey and they start a feud over whatever? Or is it just gonna be, you know, he stays champion and then it's just happy-go-lucky LWO fun stuff? I don't know. But another match that I'm sure will be very entertaining, will tell a very good story. And as of right now, I'm going to say Rey Mysterio will retain his championship in this match. And then coming up next match is another championship match, the Women's World Championship. Rhea Ripley defending against Raquel Rodriguez. And this is one that, it's funny because my little universe mode that my brother and his husband do, that we do on WWE 2K23, we had a little feud with Rhea Ripley and Raquel on there. That was a lot of fun. I played as Raquel and got my ass kicked by Rhea Ripley, which is still very much a very fun doing that little story. But it's just funny that we did that in the game several months ago, back when the game first launched back in March. We were doing it then, and then now here we are 5 months later, and they're doing it on actual WWE TV. We just think it's funny that's how it's going. But yeah, they've been building this one up for a little while, because Rhea and Raquel, they are friends in real life. They, you know, are like gym buddies as well. You know, because when I was on Instagram, I used to see a lot of the posts that they would share on their reels and the stories of them at the gym together. And this is going to be a good one. This is one that's going to test Raquel to show that she can hang in the like big leagues, I guess, one-on-one for a world championship on WWE TV, because since coming up to the main roster, she's just been in a lot of tag team feuds for the women's tag team titles. You know, nothing wrong with that, but it's just, you know, they haven't given her a solid singles story, and I think this is finally the one that they're really testing her to see if she can handle, you know, being in the playing in the big leagues, I guess. But I think Rhea Ripley is going to retain this one, because I feel like they're building her to hold the championship at least until WrestleMania. Kind of like how with like Bianca held the championship from WrestleMania 38 up until the was it at Money in the Bank? Yeah, Money in the Bank this year. And so we shall see how, no, not Money in the Bank, at Night of Champions. It was the Night of Champions that she held it. You know, if they want to give her that long push. Because I've been thinking that if they want to have like the big women's match to potentially main event WrestleMania next year, then maybe it could be Rhea Ripley and Bianca for the World Championship. And I mean, I don't know, we shall see how that works out. And but yeah, I'm thinking Rhea Ripley to retain her championship here, and then we move on to the steel cage match of Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus, a story that has been going on for several months now that a lot of fans are kind of bored with, and understandably so. They have dragged it on a little bit, but I've still been very into it. I've been entertained by the story very much so. I mean, I'm a fan of Becky Lynch, I'm a fan of Trish Stratus, and it's been fun to see Trish back semi, you know, on a semi-regular basis on WWE programming, and I've been enjoying this feud with Becky Lynch and the couple of matches that they've had already, and her being in a steel cage match, because I remember Trish was saying that she'd been wanting to be in a steel cage match before she retires for a second time, so she's forgetting her wish, taking on Becky Lynch, and the way the story has progressed these last few months, I feel it's pretty obvious that Becky Lynch is going to be the one to come out on top, and she's probably going to have a big moment in the match where either it's a leg drop from the top of the cage, or maybe the Bexploder off the, like on the top rope, but, you know, kind of from the cage, or, no, the manhandle slam off of the cage, I think is what's going to be, not from the top of the cage, because if they did that, that'd be just insane, but, no, it's going to be a big spot like that, where that would see Becky Lynch come out on top, but I'm expecting that to be a very good match as well. Honestly, this show, this card has a potential, and almost any of the matches had the potential to be a show stealer. Maybe not so much LA Knight and The Miz, but I think it's going to be a very, very, very entertaining show regardless. And moving on to the main event, what I'm expecting to be the main event, the World Heavyweight Championship. Seth freaking Rollins defending against Shinsuke Nakamura, and I'm glad that they're giving this push to Shinsuke Nakamura, because since they brought him back after his match with the Great Muta earlier this year during Muta's retirement tour, and I feel they've been doing a good job with Shinsuke, booking him as a serious contender, a serious threat to a championship, and finally taking him seriously like they should be doing. And that's not to say that him doing the goofier stuff a few years ago was not fun and entertaining. And I'm sure he had a lot of fun with it and enjoyed it a lot as well. But I'm glad that they're finally taking him seriously again, because I've wanted him to get a good main event push like this, because I mean, we got it in 2018 with his feud with AJ Styles, and it just did not go the way that a lot of fans would have wanted it to go, certainly about the way I would have wanted it to go. It started hot at WrestleMania, and it just fell so flat, and I'm hoping that it's not going to go this way now. But with Triple H booking things, I don't think they're going to risk, you know, that kind of thing happening again. Whether or not Shinsuke would win the championship, again, this is another match where it can go either way, and I'd be okay with it. But I think if they want to continue this to at least another match on the for Fastlane, I honestly would rather that Shinsuke wins, maybe not necessarily winning the championship in this match, but that the match can go in a way that they will have to continue it to the next pay-per-view or next premium live event to have their culmination, have a definitive victory in this one. But if not, then, hey, Seth Rollins gets a clean victory, I'm okay with that too. But either way, from top to bottom, I think this is going to be a solid show. And the Grayson Waller effect with Cody Rhodes is going to be a fun one, I'm sure. Whatever story that's going to lead to, you know, I guess we'll just find out Saturday. And now that brings me to, and if you're watching this on YouTube, and maybe on Spotify, because I don't know if I'm going to upload the video version of this to Spotify, we shall see. But, you know, if you're watching the video, just, I want to take the time to talk about the two gentlemen that are on the screen right behind me, that passed away last week, the WWE Hall of Famer, Terry Funk, and as well as the one that just was the biggest gut punch to fans all over the world, the passing of Wyndham Rotunda, aka Bray Wyatt. Now, on Terry Funk, I've always been a fan of Terry Funk, but, and this is no disrespect to him or his memory or his legacy or his career, but I was never as heavily invested in Terry Funk as other fans might have been from, like, way back in, like, the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, during when he was at his, in his prime, during his heyday with the NWA and WCW, ECW. And I was not as heavily invested in him during those times because, truthfully, I was not watching that wrestling like that. You know, I became aware of Terry Funk when I started watching WCW in the early 90s and watching some of the earlier ECW as well. And then when he came to WWE as Chainsaw Charlie in 97-98, and then of, you know, stuff that he would do in WCW after that, and TNA and everything else since after that, but, you know, it is still a great loss to professional wrestling to lose a legend like Terry Funk. And I mean, yes, he was in his old age and he was in poor health, but still, it's never fun when we have to say goodbye to these legends. And his impact on professional wrestling is one that will live on forever through, you know, through some of the hardcore wrestling that became synonymous with Terry Funk. And, you know, some of the great matches that he had with people like, you know, like Ric Flair, his I Quit match that, you know, the first time I got to watch it was on that Ric Flair DVD that came out in 2003 that I got that as a Christmas gift. And that was one of my favorite matches on that DVD set. The Empty Arena match that with Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler, which Mick Foley said that Terry Funk hated that match, and I can kind of understand why, but the storytelling of that match was a lot of fun. And then the match from ECW's One Night Stand 2006 with Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk against Edge and Mick Foley was a very fun and entertaining one. Dumpster match at WrestleMania 14 with Cactus and Chainsaw Charlie against the New Age Outlaws. So many great matches and memories, you know, the King of the Deathmatch tournament, his Hollywood career appearing in the Roadhouse and the Ringer that came out in 2005. You know, he is one that will definitely be missed and a legacy that will live on forever. But when I got the news of Bray Wyatt passing away, I was at work and brother-in-law texted me, just said Bray Wyatt passed away, and just my immediate reaction was just, what the fuck? As I'm sure every wrestling fan's reaction was. And honestly, it threw me off for the rest of my shift. And I just had a hard time focusing. And I've still kind of struggled with it because he passed away from a reported heart attack caused by exacerbation of COVID symptoms due to a pre-existing heart condition that he was already working with. 36 years old, but I'm 36 years old, so and I've had a history of stuff with my heart, so you can imagine the kind of mindfuck that was for me, hearing about all this, and whereas, like, you know, Terry Funk's passing hit a lot of other wrestling, you know, older wrestling fans that grew up watching him, Bray's passing hit me bad. And I've it's one of those deaths that I've had a hard time processing it because it's like, I don't know how, what to think, what to feel. Because, I mean, 36 years old, passing away from stuff with his heart, and me being 36 years old and having stuff with my heart. Hell, I've been wearing a heart monitor for the last 30 days because of some stuff that's been going on with me. And it's just and no exaggeration. As soon as I, you know, got the news that he passed away and that it was a heart attack, I started getting chest pains, and I don't know if it was a panic attack or whatever it was, or me being a hypochondriac. I don't know, but just the character of Bray Wyatt, I was a fan instantly. I mean, I already knew who he was as Husky Harris from the original run of NXT and the little clips that I saw of him in FCW, and then seeing him on NXT when he became Bray Wyatt and then brought it, the Wyatt family, up to the main roster. Just being instantly captivated by his promos, by his entrance, by his persona, his aura, the creative energy that he brought, the presentation and the cinematic aspect of his character and presentation, and the matches that he had with, you know, with John Cena and with Randy Orton and with the Wyatt family against the New Day, and his feud with The Undertaker and feuds with Finn Balor, and the feud that he had with LA Knight at the beginning of this year when he came back in 2022, you know, having the Lights Out match, the Firefly Funhouse match with Cena at WrestleMania 36, which I was just watching again the other day, and it was ridiculous, but in all the best kind of ways, and I loved it. You know, him as the Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse segments as well, and then hearing all the stories from other wrestlers that have worked with him and been with him, spent all this time with him. I was watching a video from WWE's YouTube channel earlier today as well, where they had Bayley, Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Top Dollar, Byron Saxton, Mike Rome, and sharing their stories. Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows sharing their stories and memories of Bray. And at the end of the video, some ring announcer Samantha Irvin just giving such a beautiful and heartbreaking rendition of "Got the Whole World in His Hands," which, side note, she has an absolutely beautiful singing voice, and if you haven't seen that video, highly recommend it, because the stories are just beautiful and just heartbreaking to hear. I mean, because the whole video messed me up, really, but the one thing that was said in the video that really just got me was Drew McIntyre saying that it's not fair, we should be going to a wedding, not a funeral, because Bray and JoJo, they were supposed to be getting married this year, and that's just... You know, you can only imagine how she's feeling and how the kids are feeling. You know, they just had a baby a few years ago, and, you know, his kids that he had from his first wife, and Bo Dallas, how he's going, and the sister Micah Rotunda, and Mike Rotunda, the IRS, how just... And his death has hurt and impacted so many wrestlers in the business, people that knew him, people that worked with him, and fans that loved him, and yeah, it hurts that I never got to see him perform live, and I hate that I'm never gonna get to have that experience, but I will still have the memories of getting to watch him on TV and getting to experience and the things that he did, and just that I even got to live during the era of Bray Wyatt is something that I will never forget and always cherish. And if nothing else, it's given me cause to be more conscious and cautious with my own health. Because, yeah, it's... I wouldn't want to cause that kind of pain on anybody if something like that were to happen to me. But yeah, Bray Wyatt is a character, human being, Wyndham Rotunda, loved and missed by so many, will never be forgotten. Their legacy and impact will be felt forever, and As Top Dollar said on, you know, on when he was giving his little testimony about how he was a big fan of Bray Wyatt and spent money to go to WrestleMania 30 to see him versus John Cena, he said before he was a pro wrestler, he was a Firefly, and I am a Firefly, and I will always be one. You know, more ways than one, really. You know, if you know, you know. But, yeah, that's going to do it for this much longer than I thought episode. Didn't expect to be going an hour with this one. But then again, I spent a half hour talking about All In, so there's that. But, yeah, thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for tuning in, and if you're not subscribed, please do so. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the links will be in the Linktree link that's down there below. And support me on my little store, picking up some of the fun designs that I have on there, and leave a comment on the video if you'd like to share your feedback on what you thought about All In, what you think is going to happen at Payback, and your thoughts on and memories of Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt. And yeah, thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. I truly and genuinely love and appreciate every single one of you who do, and I hope that you all are doing well, staying safe, staying healthy, taking care of yourselves, your loved ones, and being the beautiful, good people that I know you all can be. And this has been the Men in Tights Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see all of you on the next one. Bye-bye.